públicos estarán cerrados también por segundo día consecutivo como parte de la huelga de 48 horas iniciada por los docentes, que piden mejores salariales y denuncian la fusión de centros escolares para reducir los gastos de educación. El gobierno de Bolivia declaró emergencia nacional por las intensas lluvias que provocan desbordes de ríos e inundaciones.
El gobierno nacional, en atención a las inundaciones que se están produciendo en diversos lugares del país, y en aplicación de la Ley 2140 de Reducción de Riesgos y Atención de Desastres, el día de hoy está emitiendo el Decreto Supremo de Declaratoria de Emergencia.
Casi 7.000 familias resultaron afectadas en los departamentos de Cochabamba, La Paz, Santa Cruz, Tarija, Chuquisaca y Pando. El ministro de Defensa boliviano, Rubén Saavedra, indicó que el Ejecutivo destinó 20 millones de dólares para reparar los daños provocados por el temporal. La secretaria de Seguridad Nacional de Estados Unidos, Janet Napolitano, reiteró el compromiso de su país para ayudar a México en su lucha contra los cárteles de droga y el crimen organizado. Así lo señaló Napolitano durante el funeral del agente migratorio Jaime Zapata, asesinado la semana pasada por un comando armado cuando viajaba en una carretera de San Luis Potosí. «Tenemos que continuar el trabajo del agente Zapata y la importante causa a la que servía», dijo la secretaria durante el funeral celebrado en Brownsville, Texas. La semana pasada, Napolitano y el fiscal general estadounidense Eric Holder anunciaron la creación de una fuerza especial entre México y Estados Unidos liderada por el FBI para apoyar la investigación del crimen. El anuncio fue interpretado por legisladores y analistas mexicanos como una mayor injerencia estadounidense en el país. La Unión Americana es el mayor consumidor de drogas del mundo y, de acuerdo a datos del propio gobierno, más del 90% de las armas usadas por los delincuentes en México son compradas en Estados Unidos. Cientos de personas protestaron el martes en el Capitolio de Austin, Texas, contra decenas de iniciativas antiinmigrantes propuestas en la legislatura estatal por congresistas republicanos. Activistas llegados desde Dallas, Fort Worth y otras ciudades de Texas rechazaron que el Estado siga los pasos de Arizona. La manifestación fue organizada por la Alianza de Texas por la Reforma de Inmigración, cuyos líderes afirmaron que se han presentado más de 60 propuestas antifamiliares y antimigrante por parte de legisladores republicanos. Entre ellas está el mandar que la policía cumpla leyes de migración federales, requerir a los funcionarios escolares reportar a estudiantes indocumentados y el negar certificado de nacimiento a niños nacidos de padres indocumentados. Los oradores en la protesta afirmaron que las leyes antiinmigrantes de Arizona provocaron boicots nacionales e internacionales que han hecho perder al Estado miles de millones de dólares y que eso podría ocurrir también a Texas. Los manifestantes demandaron una reforma migratoria al presidente Barack Obama, recordando que el voto latino fue fundamental para que ganara la presidencia de Estados Unidos.
La Comisión Nacional de Derechos Humanos de México dio a conocer su reporte anual, donde revela los secuestros, abusos y asesinatos que sufren los migrantes en su paso por territorio mexicano rumbo a Estados Unidos. Eduardo Martínez reporta.
Durante el 2010, unos 11.333 migrantes fueron víctimas de secuestro mientras transitaban por territorio mexicano en su intento por llegar a Estados Unidos, reveló un informe de la Comisión Nacional de Derechos Humanos.
Los agravios que se erigen en su contra no solamente suele ser privados de la libertad, sino que identificamos también actos de violación sexual, la privación de la vida de algunos de ellos, maltratos y torturas a las que son expuestos.
Según este organismo descentralizado, el año pasado se registraron 214 secuestros masivos, principalmente en los estados de Veracruz, Tabasco, Tamaulipas, San Luis Potosí, Chiapas y Oaxaca.
Entre los secuestradores se logró identificar que existen también migrantes que se hacen pasar como tales y que son miembros de la banda de secuestradores y que desde ahí ubican, localizan a las posibles víctimas para posteriormente cometer este delito.
La realidad que enfrentan los indocumentados fue motivo de debate en el Senado de la República, donde fue aprobada en lo general una ley de migración que busca regular el paso de migrantes por la frontera sur.
Es tener una ley a la altura del fenómeno migratorio que hoy en día nos encuentra rebasado y que nos encuentra con un marco normativo que no está a la altura de él. Estamos tarde en la cita puntual que debiéramos haber legislado hace décadas sobre el tema migratorio de nuestra nación. Es un tema trascendente.
Y se convirtió en tema trascendente en agosto de 2010, cuando la comunidad internacional reaccionó ante la masacre de 72 migrantes en el fronterizo estado de Tamaulipas, uno de los más disputados por los cárteles de la droga. Eduardo Martínez, Telesur, Ciudad de México.
Estás escuchando el Informativo Pacífica. Si deseas comunicarte con nosotros, puedes escribirnos al correo electrónico pueblossinfronteras@gmail.com.
Libia, el hijo del presidente de ese país, Saif al-Islam, reveló en rueda de prensa que la violencia política de los últimos días ha causado la muerte de cuando menos 300 personas, 242 civiles y 58 militares. Al-Islam señaló que la Fuerza Aérea Nacional bombardeó un depósito de armas alejado de zonas urbanas y negó que militares hayan atacado a civiles. Por su parte, el presidente libio, Muammar Gaddafi, habló ante la nación dejando claro que su gobierno no se rendirá ante presiones de grupos de jóvenes manipulados por intereses especiales que sirven a los planes de desestabilización de extranjeros. Los medios corporativos también repiten frecuentemente reportes de la organización Human Rights Watch, entidad que sirvió para crear una opinión pública favorable para la intervención militar estadounidense en Yugoslavia. Los nexos entre Human Rights Watch y la élite encargada de la política exterior estadounidense han sido profundamente documentados por el investigador Paul Trenner. Trenner muestra cómo Human Rights Watch tiene en su seno ex empleados del gobierno, fundaciones, ONGs y académicos estrechamente vinculados a la política exterior norteamericana. La información recabada por Trenner deja claro que desde Helsinki Watch hasta la Fundación Ford o el multimillonario George Soros, Human Rights Watch comparte la visión de Washington de amoldar el mundo de acuerdo a los intereses norteamericanos. Por su parte, la secretaria de Estado norteamericano Hillary Clinton, refiriéndose a la situación en Libia, declaró que la violencia es inaceptable, mientras que la líder alemana Angela Merkel tildó el discurso del presidente Gaddafi como una declaración de guerra contra su propio pueblo. Y Navi Pillay, de la Oficina de Derechos Humanos de la ONU, emitió su posición diciendo que los ataques contra la población libia equivalen a crímenes contra la humanidad. Sin embargo, ni Merkel, ni Clinton o Pillay se han expresado de la misma forma ante las muertes, secuestros y tortura de disidentes en Túnez, Egipto y Bahrein. El supuesto uso de mercenarios en Libia también ha generado críticas en los medios corporativos proestadounidenses, los mismos que han guardado silencio ante el uso de asesinos a sueldo en Irak, Afganistán y Bahrein. Historiadores recuerdan cómo Muammar Gaddafi, al tomar control del gobierno libio en 1969, expulsó a los norteamericanos de la base militar que mantenían en ese país árabe. Luego están las repercusiones de la crisis en Trípoli. El barril del crudo sube de precio mientras que la compañía petrolera Eni de Italia y Repsol de España han parado la producción de petróleo en Libia, país considerado como el mayor productor de crudo en África. La compañía Eni de Italia también mantiene relaciones con la Federación Rusa en las áreas de comunicaciones, manufactura, la banca y el sector nuclear. Si bien Libia se ha convertido en un importante inversionista en la economía italiana, China planea incrementar sus inversiones en el país europeo a 100.000 millones de dólares para 2015. En tanto, los gobiernos de Bolivia, Argentina y Paraguay instaron al gobierno de Libia y a su pueblo a resolver los conflictos internos por la vía pacífica y que detengan la ola de violencia que en los últimos días ha causado manifestaciones a favor y en contra del presidente Muammar Gaddafi. En lo que va a la posición de los opositores en rebelión en Libia, la televisora Al Jazeera señala que mientras que estos denuncian una supuesta represión del Estado, también han incendiado edificios de varios organismos gubernamentales. Además, la televisora estatal Libia reporta que manifestantes han saqueado otras instituciones y agredido a varios funcionarios. En Los Ángeles, yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
Los invitamos a visitar nuestra página blog en pueblossinfronteras.wordpress.com, donde podrá opinar y encontrar más detalles sobre las noticias de Estados Unidos, América Latina y el mundo desde una perspectiva progresista.
Un tribunal de la provincia de Río Negro en Argentina pidió se verifique que los residentes tienen acceso al lago escondido porque se denuncia que el terrateniente estadounidense Joe Lewis lo ha bloqueado. Roxana Vázquez reporta.
El Superior Tribunal de Justicia de la provincia de Río Negro ordenó un recorrido por los accesos al lago escondido en la localidad de El Bolsón para verificar si el CODEMA, el Consejo del Medio Ambiente y Vialidad de la provincia, realizan las obras de mantenimiento y garantizan el acceso a los lagos a todos los rionegrinos. El Superior Tribunal ordenó los recorridos a instancias de un amparo presentado por la legisladora del ARI, Magdalena Odarda, organizaciones sociales y ambientalistas del Bolsón. Mientras que para el CODEMA el acceso a los lagos está garantizado, para la legisladora quedaron comprobadas las serias dificultades para hacerlo.
Bueno, el CODEMA siempre tuvo una posición parcializada, siempre se puso del lado de la empresa Lago Escondido y eso fue siempre así y sigue siendo así, lamentablemente, porque debieran estar del lado de los ciudadanos. Pero bueno, no nos sorprende. Confiamos en la justicia y en el juez Sodero Nievas. Si ustedes leen la aclaratoria que hace el Superior Tribunal.
Y esto es todo por la programa de KPFK. And that's it for that KPFK program. Went a bit over time. Hopefully, if you're interested, you can go to the KPFK. Se puede ir a la KPFK on the web and hear it there. Disculpeme, pero it's time now for Bathrob Spears Broadside. Stay tuned for the next 2 hours for street interviews, discussion, and who knows, your own thoughts on issues that are local and mostly concerned with poor people's civil rights in Santa Cruz.
Save you in the end. Take me to by the edge, reflecting all the fireworks in my head.
That was an unknown song, but kind of a rhythmic one. Maybe I can figure out what that number was and mention it. I think it's called actually Free Thing. Free Things for Poor People. So there you are. Welcome to 101.1 FM, freakradio.org, in case you haven't been here before, and welcome back if you have. I'm Robert Norris. The name of the show is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. And my sides are pretty broad, and I do a lot of broadsiding around issues such as City Council crapola, their most recent giveaway to DSAL consultants, the cutbacks on the Social Security Network, and, of course, the paranoid beefing up of all things policing, the demonization of poor and homeless people, and the creation of laws specifically designed to give police more powers to hassle them and used for that purpose. And then again, some positive things that seem to be happening or might potentially happen regarding pressures from homeless activists to change laws that criminalize such basic things as sleeping at night. So poor people at night who have no place to go, and 95% of the homeless outside don't, even though there is an armory open in the winter with a 75 spaces, 100 if you cram them in, and 46 spaces in the Paul Lee Loft for emergency shelter. There actually is no emergency shelter other than the armory, and that has a number of limitations, as I've talked about in the past. But in order to avoid criminalization for sleeping outside, which is, in fact, the law in Santa Cruz, if you sleep after 11 o'clock at night outside, it's a ticket. $98 infraction citation, three or more of which, if you're unattended, can produce time in jail, large fines, arrests, all kinds of problems. The word from activist Steve Plaich, who's been in touch with the city attorney's office, is that there have only been four tickets issued since October. And I think they've dismissed one and three they couldn't do that because they couldn't find the names of the people on the waiting list. And here's a, I don't know if that's true. I find myself really suspicious about that stat, but I want to make sure I'm going to be checking it out. Usually there's a much greater number of tickets issued per month, at least usually 60 tickets if you count Parks and Rec tickets and Santa Cruz Police Department tickets for, again, the crime of sleeping or, in some cases, camping. There's the actual sleeping is actually a crime after 11 o'clock at night. Camping is a crime 24 hours a day if they show that you intend to remain overnight and you have camping equipment to that effect, or you're foolish enough to announce that you're setting up a campsite for that purpose. But it may be because of the amendment passed to the camping ordinance and last September, which went into effect in October, that they are pulling in their horns on this one, either for humanitarian reasons or more likely out of fear of legal liability and under pressure from the embarrassment of the Peace Camp 2010 homeless activists who for 3 months did sleepouts and campouts in front of the city hall and the county building and now face court trials and jury trials in the courts coming up in April. And actually, I think there is a... Well, there's a hearing coming up for Linda LeMaster, I believe, in early March. Her attorney, Mark Garver, is going to try to throw out the charge against her, which is under 647E, the state penal code lodging law used in probably about 50 cases in August to try to drive away a legal political protest in front of the county building. And people were arrested, people were cited, people were jailed, and people faced arrest warrants that issued subsequently. It's all pretty nasty. It looks like I'm going to have to be doing some research, hopefully, either with a Public Records Act request or maybe I can get the information directly from some council members, Vice Mayor Don Lane, perhaps, who knows, even though he's been recalcitrant on giving out other information to me. He and I seem to be having friendly chats as we walked around a week ago on the Take Back the Streets joint venture of the groups Take Back Santa Cruz and the City's Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, or let's say Embarrassment Against Upper Middle Class People. Perhaps that's a better name for their group. I don't know. Or let's not embarrass the police department with the rape stats, the very, very bad rape closure rates, and that's not the right word for it, but it has to do with cases that the SCPD has actually been able to finish, send to the DA, and it's very low compared to cases in other coastal communities of our size, according to Jillian Greenside, and actually according to an editorial I read of hers published in the Sentinel a couple years ago. She's also talked about that issue on Free Radio, and you can find some of that discussion if you want to go online to our archives. So the archives of this program can be found at www.huffsantacruz.org. And then you click on the name of the show, Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadsides, and Google for Greensight, Jillian Greensight, who is the, formerly she was the chair of the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women until Rotkin refused to reappoint her because apparently, well, one thought was that she was embarrassing the police department with exposure of their bad job, and Rotkin didn't want that to happen. After all, he was the mayor, and, you know, the city has to be running smoothly and all that sort of thing. Or you can come to your own conclusions as to why that happened. Anyway, what's cooking with homeless folks outside? Well, people should try to sign up for the waiting lists out there at the Homeless Services Center and see if police are actually, once you're on the waiting list and they find you sleeping at night, if they do give you a ticket, are those tickets getting dismissed? I want to know. I've asked some homeless activists to try to find out. Maybe we will. Maybe we won't. If anybody knows, if anybody has any new information on the subject, are your sleeping band tickets, are your camping tickets getting dismissed once you've signed up on the waiting list out at the Homeless Service Center? Have you had trouble signing out there, as some say they have? Are there qualifications for signing up? The staff that I've talked to says no, you can just sign right up. Then let's hear what's going on. The number to call here for the studio is 427-3772, 427-FRSC. Maybe you want to talk about this issue. It's getting kind of cold and rainy out there for homeless people, and people like Officer Winston are still running around giving people citations for sitting near a building, sitting within 14 feet of a crosswalk, sitting within 50 feet of a change-making machine, sitting on a bench for more than an hour. That hasn't come up too much recently, but it's the law, and it is used. All these laws are used to run homeless people around and fundamentally run them out of sight and out of town at the discretion of the police officers. If you have a nice relationship with a particular police officer, then you maybe feel okay for the moment until the next guy or gal on the beat comes on with her new rule book. And you might say, well, yeah, but the law is the law. And the answer is no. The law is whatever the police officer at the moment decides to enforce. And that's the problem with selectively enforced laws. Let's go directly now to the streets, and let's hear some interviews. I've been kind of collecting them, and it's time for me to get rid of them before they disappear into my archives. You can call in, again, as I said, 427-3772, 427-FRSC. We are Free Radio Santa Cruz. Before I do that, though, I want to apologize. It looks like the Homeless Marathon, the Homelessness Marathon that aired all over the country yesterday from 4 in the afternoon on Wednesday to 6 in the morning on Thursday did not get out on Free Radio Santa Cruz. I don't know why. I haven't yet found out from folks who were supposed to put that up there, but it didn't get put up there, and so we didn't have a homelessness marathon on Free Radio. And I'm hoping that at some point in the future we can rebroadcast it, because even though we can't do it live, as we could have done yesterday and did in previous years, perhaps we can do it sort of as a follow-up. There is a website on which older homelessness marathons can be heard, and I suspect that the current one, the one that was played yesterday, can also be heard at some point. I don't know if it's up there yet. Just Google for homelessness marathon or annual homelessness marathon, and maybe we can alleviate that, or should we say remedy, or mitigate that disaster. What are the right words? I don't know, but it's too bad. I'm kind of a little bit bummed about it, and I'd kind of hoped that we would have proceeded because we did get the okay from the collective, and I thought it was all set up. But there we have it. Anyway, we do have this twice-a-week show, which you'll hear if you tune in between 6 and 8 on Thursday nights, as is happening tonight, or on Sunday mornings, 9:30 to 1 o'clock. And for those who want to get more active, you can contact the organization I work with, Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, Huff. And you can call 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F. And then we need volunteers of all kinds, people who want to work with computers, people who want to write things, people who want to do some tabling, people who want to keep an eye on the courts or on the police, people who want to volunteer to interview people out at the Homeless Service Center, people who want to volunteer to help the people who are facing jail for defending the rights of the entire homeless community, and really the rights of the entire community, because in these days, you don't know when you're going to be homeless next. 423-HUFF is the number to call. We need people to help. And Attorney Ed Fry certainly needs help, too. He's not only the attorney for five other individuals, he's also defending himself and facing jail himself for doing the kind of public service that he should be getting an award for, providing a porta-potty for 3 months for homeless people in a city that does not provide bathrooms at night for anybody, unless you happen to have money or you own a store or you're connected with a store or you live in a residence somewhere. There are no 24-hour bathrooms at all, although it may be that the Homeless Service Center's bathroom, opened by former Executive Director Doug Loisel, is still open. I know some of his policies have been reversed. The Homeless Service Center now drives away homeless people who want to come there during the day, even when it's raining, which is kind of an obscene situation. If people have new information that this is not the case, please let me know, and I can pass it on. These cases need your help. We need volunteers. We're looking for all kinds of help, whether it's you're a student, you want to spend some time doing this, even an hour could be helpful. 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Let's listen to some interviews now and check out the streets.
Street with a woman who probably doesn't want to be recorded. She's drinking a cup of coffee. It's around 8 o'clock. We're in front of Dale Williams, and she's smoking a cigarette. Now, admittedly, it's completely illegal on Pacific Avenue, but it doesn't really bother me. Does it bother you?
Not one bit.
And now, you said you've been... I'm going to ask you, you don't have to answer any questions because you're a free human being, but you've already said you're not too interested in being tape recorded. Is that accurate?
Today's not my day.
You seem pretty articulate today, though.
Like I'm not, ever.
No, you're pretty articulate, I'll have to agree, generally speaking. But you say that you received some no-smoking advisories from Bumblebee hosts?
I did, and she didn't say please, and she was very rude.
By Bumblebee hosts, I mean Yellow Jackets. Those are the sort of paid para-police people who walk up and down the avenue with big grins on their faces, acting like they're friendly, but actually engaged in repressive behavior toward poor and homeless people, or those youth folks who are hanging out in Pacific Avenue that in some way violate the rather complex matrix of forbidden zone laws set up by the Santa Cruz City Council and enforced by Mayor Ryan Coonerty and City Manager Martine Bernal and Police Chief Kevin Vogel.
I'll eat my ass.
So did she say someone had complained, or she was just running around enforcing rules?
I was smoking blatantly right in front of her.
I see. And this was what time of day?
Oh, I'd say 4, 5.
This was today? Or?
Yeah, today.
Today on a rainy Friday. And here's a musician without his music. What's going on here, musician man?
It's in his head.
We're going to hear some singing, perhaps, some humming. Perhaps a smoke is coming. This is smoke in the corner. And there actually is a lot of smoking going on. Well, at least a number of people smoking up and down Pacific Avenue. Some of them middle class, some of them homeless. And, of course, I'm passing Borders, which is about to close, according to the Sentinel. But there's a welcome break in the rain. And it's a peaceful and fairly warm evening. Or maybe it's because I have on several layers of clothing. And we're down Pacific Avenue. It's around 15 to 6. We've got a man doing some singing here in front of New Leaf. He's singing and singing.
Oh, yeah. Good up in Rio. Show me some of those Spanish dancers and pass me a bottle of Mr. Dawn. Believe in me. Help me believe in anything. Cause I want to be someone who tales of please stare at the beautiful women. She's looking at you. Oh no, no, she's looking at me, standing in the bright light. We're coming through in stereo when everybody loves me. I'll never be lonely. Well, I won't paint my picture, paint myself blue and red, black and gray, and all of the beautiful colors that are very, very Picasso. I would buy myself a gray guitar and play Mr. Jones and me, staring to the future, and we stare at the beautiful women. She's looking at you, I don't think so, she's looking at me.
Well, here we are at the Red Church on the Monday Chow Down. I guess it's sort of a coffee house at around 6:30. 6:15. I'm talking with
Ricardo Lopez, who camps in the river. And no, these are not, as far as I know, Take Back Santa Cruz people, unless they also are in on it. One of them is a guy who works for the city, who came up, tried to take one of our radios, said this is all trash. We had another guy who declared it all trash and threw it in and took whatever he wanted. This is a and we had the guys who get hired to come do the cleanup go through people's stuff and take their stuff. City people go through the homeless people's stuff because we do go garbage digging. They took my leather. Let's see, what else did they take? A brand new leather coat, very good one. Mm-hmm. You know, little things that we get. Nice shoes.
How long ago was this, Rick?
This was this summer. Yeah, you know, they hire homeless people from another place to come through here, and those homeless people are taking stuff, too. They're not doing much better than we are.
So I want to clarify, though, because it looks like I may have made a mistake in suggesting that you were saying at one point that you thought this was the Take Back Santa Cruz cleanup. It wasn't, as far as you know.
As far as, actually, the Take Back Santa Cruz cleanup people, we usually help them. They're just a bunch of citizens who are misled by whatever this Take Back. They don't realize that the people who are living in the... People should go out there and ask them where they're from. They're from Boulder Creek. They're from Santa Cruz. They're from Soquel.
They being the people living there? Or
the people living in the river.
Uh-huh.
They feel safe there because they played there as children. Mm-hmm. They know the whole area. Yeah, the homeless people around here, the majority of them are natives.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. People are buying into Fox News or some other lie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, Ricardo, I haven't seen you downtown much. Are you still playing music down there?
Yes, I am. And I shall be playing very soon. I've been interacting with a lot of the musicians. And we're going to try and get some more organized music up there because, frankly, the Santa Cruz music scene is one of the great gems of California. There's nothing like it in the state of California. The only people that I ever hear knock this music scene are Santa Cruzians who haven't left Santa Cruz for a long time to realize what it is they have and that other people don't.
Now, what's the situation like for those who, I take it you're still camping down on the levee, or is that accurate?
You know, our river is, I'm counting birds. I now know all of the different kinds of birds. I watch the fish. I see the invasive species of lobsters, the big green ones, and the little big red ones, actually. The river is really coming back. It's cleaner than ever. We keep, one of the reasons that they put up with us is because we pick up all of the trash in our area, even if it's other people's trash. You know, they realize there are going to be people down there. If they chase the clean ones out, dirty ones come in their place. And it's work. It's a chore. There's lots of dirty people. A lot of people don't feel that much hope.
No citations or harassment in the last couple weeks?
Citations get sent to credit, or it goes against your license. There's no bite in the citations. They don't even put out a warrant for your arrest. They might not file them because it costs the city money to harass people who are only going to cost them money.
Now, have they done any of these citations you know in the last couple weeks?
Yeah, I have like 7 of them.
For the last couple weeks?
Oh, no, not in the last couple of weeks. I have got like 7 of them that they've done nothing about. My family are all, I'm the black sheep of a family of California bureaucrats.
Now, over the last couple weeks, again, I'm trying to get a focus on more recent times.
Sir.
Anything happened more recently?
I believe that they're just absolutely overwhelmed by the amount of homeless people, and there's going to be more. And, the bottom is falling. A lot of people who are a lot poorer are a lot different towards us because they realize their friends who were living among them are now out among us. There are more and more homeless people and less space and resources. And that looks like a trend that's going to continue all through 2011.
Particularly down on the levee? Or
the levee is getting more and more crowded. We're already thinking of what we're going to do. You know, the area where I'm camping now, several people camp there. When I first went up there, the reason I went there was because I went there to be alone. Initially, 1 year ago, I went to this place on the river so I could be alone. I started camping there because it was far away. Now, several people camp there regularly. There can be as many as 10 people camping there. And when I first started camping there, it was because it was out of the way.
You've been there for the last 2 weeks yourself?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I've been in the same place for a year and one-third, actually.
And no tickets during that two-week period?
Not in the last 2 weeks, no. But actually, all of the police know me by face now and have all spoken to me. Yeah.
So they don't give you tickets anymore?
Well, the tickets don't do any good. They gave me the tickets. They went. They don't turn to warrant. They send them to collections. Yeah, because they're... If they don't just not file them.
That's possible. Although it is true that the council passed new laws that mean 3 tickets enable them to file a misdemeanor charge if they want. And I'm not... That's been done once for a guy named Jones about half a year ago, but I don't know if it's been done subsequently. But it is a possibility, so I wanted to just give you a heads up.
Great. I can sleep for a few days and eat. Great. I'll live longer.
Hey, Ricardo Lopez, thank you for your help.
Thank you for being there, Robert.
All right, man.
And so, again, a clarification from past broadcasts. Ricardo Lopez was a man who had previously told me, I thought, that the people taking his property on the levee were, at least some of them, were Take Back Santa Cruz cleanup crews. It sounds like he's correcting that now, and if that's the case and Take Back Santa Cruz has been mistakenly accused of that, I want to take a step back from that. But let's hear what this caller has to say. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. Uncle Dennis here.
Hey, Dennis. How's it going? Now, you're coming up, of course, in about an hour and a half. And
That's correct. But what I wanted to do right now is remind Free Radio listeners that John Trudell, who was on Free Radio from 4 to 5 this afternoon, is going to be starting his evening program at room 450 at Cabrillo right now. So John Trudell is a Native American poet, actor, musician, rap artist, activist with the American Indian Movement, a very dynamic and interesting person who doesn't get to Santa Cruz all that often, but the event is free. Once again, it's room 450 at Cabrillo, and it's starting right now, and they'll be there for a while.
Now, are you there, Uncle Dennis?
No, no. I'm getting ready for my show. I had a chance to meet with John, like I say, between 4 and 5 this afternoon when he was actually in the studio sitting right where you are.
Oh, well, that's good. Do you know if anyone's recording his talk for a later broadcast?
Yes. It is recorded, and we'll be playing it back at other times.
Any word on what happened to the Homelessness Marathon yesterday?
Well, if you'd like to talk about that off the air, I'd be glad to do that with you, John. Robert.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll find out. Maybe we can rebroadcast parts of it later.
I think that'd probably be the way to approach the issues that came up yesterday.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Well, we'll be hoping to hear from you, and maybe you'll have more on John. For those who can't get down to room 450 at Cabrillo College, and you can give us sort of an update on what's going on.
All right. See ya.
Thank you, Uncle Dennis. I'm not too sure why it can't be discussed on the air, but hey, you know, at least let's be a little more discreet, I guess. So, anyway, this is Free Radio. You're listening to 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. There still seems to be reluctance on the part of Take Back Santa Cruz organizations to simply show, I would say, the kind of respect for homeless property that I'm told Save Our Shores does in their cleanups. But then again, you know, this particular person's testimony that I had previously interviewed, and he did seem to say at that time he thought it was Take Back Santa Cruz. It apparently is not the group that's gone after his property. I wanted to clarify that. And if Take Back Santa Cruz is not doing this, I say right on for them. But again, you know, it would seem a lot better for them to come out and simply say so. Say specifically, we're telling our volunteers, just as other groups are, to be careful not to destroy homeless campgrounds, campsites, and so forth. But, you know, necessarily to go after trash. I think everyone appreciates people who go after trash. And homeless folks themselves. It's great, and I've been urged to urge you to clean up as best you can, pack it in, pack it out. I mean, obviously, you know, that's kind of goes without saying. But if it doesn't go without saying, then I'm saying it. Obviously, you know, it's a good thing to do. Raises the whole dialogue. It removes the pretext or real concern that people have for saying, oh, these homeless people are just a bunch of messy, trash-leaving, icky, needle, fecal, ooky-pooky, yucky-pucky types, and therefore, you know, they're just subhuman, and we have a right to criminalize them and say it's illegal for them to sleep after 11 o'clock at night, which, of course, is also ridiculous, but that's the way some legislators and law enforcement and middle-class minds work at different times. NIMBY minds, residents who are more concerned with maintaining the select membership of their gated community than they are with respecting the rights of the community broadly, poor and rich alike, one of which is the right to sleep, not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere, even if they don't have a place to live. So, today's Sentinel had a story in the business section, which I don't normally look at. Two stories, actually. One is oil shock could drown recovery. I always like this idea that there actually is a recovery. I haven't noticed any recovery, but that's, of course, the claim. It's a recovery for people with profits, I suppose, the people with real estate, for people with large investments in banks and so forth. Of course, they don't have to worry about a recovery. The Bush and Obama administrations are doing all that work for them and looting the public treasury as they go. And once the public treasury is bare, we got the attacks on working people and middle-class people with union destruction and cutbacks and social service slashing and all that sort of thing. Because, you see, somebody has to balance the budget. Somebody has to pay off the bankers so they don't lose their profits. you know, we have to save the economy. Well, instead of holding the people responsible who did this, you have scapegoating of those who can least afford to deal with it and who are suffering the most because of it. Anyway, a couple of stories. One is oil shock could drown recovery. $100 a barrel market would have major impact on consumers and U.S. economy. This is an AP story. Just as U.S. and global economies are finally strengthening, they face a new danger, rocketing oil prices, which topped $100 a barrel Wednesday. The U.S. economy, Gene Aversa and Christopher Ruggeber, the writers say, could absorb, likely, the $100 oil price and keep expanding, even though gasoline prices would rise further and growth would slow. But it would hurt. Gasoline for U.S. motorists already costs more than any point since 2008, despite ample supplies. National average for a gallon of unleaded is 53 cents higher than it was a year ago. But as they jumped this week as violence gripped Libya. Analysts say any production declines in Libya could be absorbed by other producers like Saudi Arabia until they kick those clowns out, the monarchy there. Libyan oil accounts for less than 1% of U.S. crude imports. Still, the violence has produced concerns that there will be a fear premium. It's at about $10 a barrel. Consumers and businesses would feel pinched by a sustained price of $100 a barrel oil, not just motorists. Stock prices have lost more than 2% this week. Anyway, it's a longer story. It shows you how prices in 2008 went up to $150 a barrel, and they are climbing again. Underneath that is another story. Highest level of troubled banks in 18 years. So much for Obama's bank corrections or payoffs. The number of banks at risk of failing made up nearly 12% of all federally insured banks in the final 3 months of 2010, the highest level in 18 years. The Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, FDIC, said Wednesday that the number of banks on its confidential problem list rose to 884 in the October-December quarter, up from 860 in the previous quarter. These are banks rated by examiners having very low capital cushions against risk. 22 banks have failed so far this year, and more banks are at risk, even as reported the industry's highest earnings as a group since the financial crisis hit 3 years ago. In other words, banks are making lots more money, but they're even more likely to fail. Only a small fraction of the 7,657 federally insured banks, about 1.4%, with assets of more than $10 billion, are driving the bulk of earnings growth. They are the largest banks, including Bank of America, Citigroup, J.P. Morgan Chase, and Wells Fargo. And there's more to the story. I am not sufficiently well-educated on these issues to make a lot of intelligent commentary, but what I draw from this is things are getting worse. The rich banks are getting richer. The banks are far less secure than they were. And prices are rising for everybody else, yet they're calling it a recovery. Horseshit is my response to this kind of thing. I usually bring to the studio a whole bunch of clippings that I never get to. Well, I'm going to get to those clippings today. I'm going to run through them one by one, make some commentary on them, and encourage you to call in too. 427-3772 is the call-in number here. And you're listening to Free Radio 101.1 FM. I'm Robert Norris, in case you've forgotten. City on a Hill Press, from a week or two ago, February 3rd, actually, has a rather obscene picture of an African-American activist, Terrence Roberts, civil rights activist, and a picture of our mayor, Ryan Coonerty, shaking his hand and giving him a key to the city. He's one of the former Little Rock Nine students. He was one of the nine black students who became the first to attend an all-white high school in Little Rock, Arkansas, in 57, just 3 years after the Supreme Court ruled segregation unconstitutional, and they got a lot of shit for that, I'll tell you. Not the Supreme Court so much as the nine Little Rock students and lots of other people in Little Rock. What's annoying is this photo of Ryan Coonerty. Ryan Coonerty is sort of an amiable guy, part of the Coonerty family, for those who don't know him. I really never knew him before he became a member of the city council. He is, Neil Coonerty's son. Neil Coonerty opened up the bookshop Santa Cruz on Pacific Avenue, which I thought was quite a nice store for a time. Actually, Coonerty and I were, he helped store the homeless table, as we called it, back in the 80s. in his basement, and we'd come out and petition for an end to the sleeping ban. That ended fairly soon. He didn't like us doing that after a while. And Coonerty then ran for office and became much more conservative and business-oriented, even though he was originally kind of a group of the more liberal businesses downtown. And in some respects, the Coonerty Bookstore, or Bookshop Santa Cruz, or I call it Bookshop Coonerty, does maintain some personally liberal policies. I mean, they occasionally see a homeless person sleeping in their doorway. They have probably the only semi-public bathroom open in one. They used to have the only public, one of the only public bathrooms open in downtown Santa Cruz. But the problems with the bookshop are, I think, closely related to the political views of the family that owns it. Neil and Ryan are very conservative in terms of their views on poor and homeless people, their rights in public spaces, the rights of activists in the downtown area, essentially constitutional rights of the public, the right to public access, the right to access to city council and public comment spaces at city council and so forth. And they've adopted an increasingly right-wing agenda locally at the same time as, you know, their, I think Coonerty received the Hammer of Justice Award from the American Civil Liberties Union, which I, of course, repeatedly criticize as being horrible on local issues. And it just sort of makes me gag to see him making political hay off of ancient civil rights activities by one of the former Little Rock Nine. But, you know, that's nothing new. Coonerty's Tuesday City Council meeting, by the way, he's our mayor, by the way, in case I didn't mention that. I think I did, but unfortunately, it probably bears mentioning again. The Tuesday City Council meeting, you know, had a huge multi-$100,000 giveaway to the DeSalle consultants, which was significantly opposed, I understand, by almost everybody except the staff who wanted to do it and the city council that unanimously voted for it. Kind of like, I don't know, it often seems the elites at the top are well bought out or scared out or pressured out. At the same time as we see across the world, particularly in the Middle East, revolution is rising. And, you know, that's no longer just rhetoric. It's on your television screens, on your computer screens, on the headlines of the newspapers every day. It's there. People are rising up, not just, you know, the same old people with the same old political organizations that for years, to their credit, have been trying to raise issues, but hundreds of thousands of ordinary people have had enough. And we may see something similar happening in Wisconsin and Indiana and Ohio and Idaho, if I'm getting the news properly from Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! And some of the other sources that seem to be talking about how union members and teachers and people from all kinds of different professions are standing up and fighting back against the Republican agenda and the Democratic neoliberal agenda as well, to cut back and destroy unions, in this case public employee unions, as the in order to balance a budget that has been essentially ripped off by large corporations and the war machine and a number of other truly villainous groups, where villainy means, for whatever reason, essentially looting the pensions of the elderly, slashing the safety net of the poor and the disabled, and, you know, looting the bank accounts of working people by also, of course, cutting into the amount of money, their standard of living, which I don't think there's been a substantive rise in the standard of living in 30 years in this country in terms of the amount of time people have to work to get to stand in one place. Anyway, looking through a few other stories here. I spend a lot of time, or a certain amount of time, following local San Francisco news because there's a good section of the San Francisco Chronicle I recommend to people called the Section B. It's the local section, which actually it doesn't just parrot the AP, but has a few independent columnists and reporters who check out what's going on with the San Francisco Police Department, what's going on with the attacks on homeless people. Unfortunately, you get a lot of commentary from the right by people like C.W. Nevius, who is a right-wing columnist who appears twice a week in the Chronicle. But it's in, even in his columns, you can find the opponents talking. Nevius, for example, is saying, why aren't there more public bathrooms? Which you might say, right on, right on. But then his next sentence is, how can St. Anthony's kitchen feed people without providing, you know, public bathrooms for the people that cluster there? You know, they're creating a problem with this feeding situation. What he should be saying is that there should, this should, public bathrooms should be as a necessary civilized part of any large urban area these days. And I think that is the case overseas in many large cities, that they do provide public bathrooms. I could be wrong about that, but that was my understanding of what happens in Europe, and I probably should probably do more research on that issue, and hopefully I will. But instead, he uses it as a club to beat up a particular food-providing agency, just as in Florida, NIMBYs are trying to shut down Food Not Bombs and other organizations that provide food to poor people because they don't like the groups of homeless people that gather. And that, of course, has also happened in Santa Cruz, where Cynthia Matthews and conservative members of Father Joel Miller's congregation at the Calvary Episcopal Red Church, across from the Nickelodeon, have gone after him for providing a Monday night meal once a week, for God's sake, to poor people. That's too much for the snobs, and it's hard not to call them bigots, who apparently exercise disproportionate power in the downtown area through the city council, although Cynthia Matthews, formerly vice mayor and formerly mayor, is no longer on the city council. She still comes to these public meetings. She still shows up I'm afraid she's a likely political aspirant for future political office. I saw her at the march for the Take Back Santa Cruz, Take Back the Streets rally on Friday that went on, and I reported on Sunday. So there's this problem even in Santa Cruz. Oh, for sure in Santa Cruz. You think it's a liberal town. You think it's got a lot of great liberal aspects to it. It's a wonderful town, so forth and so on. Well, not for a lot of people, and not in the direction it's going. And that's why we have to really watch that sound and see what's going down. Everybody look. What do we got here in the ongoing clipping situation? Something that depressed me that I brought up to a friend on the phone earlier today is an article from about a month ago in the Chronicle where the Supreme Court ruled unanimously that background checks of scientists and engineers at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, done by the George Bush administration in 2004, even though these people at this group don't have access to classified information, the government can look into the personal lives, finances, and drug habits of NASA scientists. This was challenged by 28 employees at the Pasadena lab, most of whom had worked there for 20 years, according to the story by Bob Agelko of the Chronicle. And they'd already undergone routine background checks when hired, according to their lawyers. But the new 2004 policy required them to authorize the government to ask landlords, former employers, and people they had used as references about their honesty, finances, drug use, and emotional stability. Now, the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, the one that's sent my case against the city council back for trial, in a trial that is slated probably to begin in a couple of months in San Jose, where the city council is, I'm suing them for false arrest, and three mayors are going to be up for that on that particular lawsuit. That's the same Ninth Circuit. They ruled in 2008 on this case for the NASA scientists that the questions that were being asked by the Bush administration had little apparent connection to security or other legitimate government needs. Again, I'm reading from the story. A reasonable investigation, however, and this says our Supreme Court overruling the Ninth Circuit, of applicants and employees aid the government in ensuring the security of its facilities and employing a competent, reliable workforce. Again, this is sort of a vague statement that has, even though these people had worked there for 20 years, even though they'd undergone routine background checks, even though there was no relevance shown, Doesn't matter. Justice Samuel Alito said that broad questions about behavior and emotional stability were an appropriate tool for separating strong candidates from weak ones, even though there apparently was no indication that they were actually re-examining people for... they weren't looking at people anew. They were looking at people from the past, who were already employed there. Not quite sure I understand why. The vote was, disgracefully enough, 8-0, and Obama was pushing this whole thing as well. The ruling provoked an indignant opinion from Justice Scalia that was even worse, who denied that the Constitution contains any right to keep private information away from the government. There is no constitutional right to informational privacy, said Scalia, joined by Clarence Thomas. And the reason this came up was because the court's majority has claimed that there is a right that exists, but that in this case it doesn't apply. And that right was first recognized in 1965, according to this article, in the 1965 birth control case in Connecticut, holding that a woman has a right to use birth control. That's a Ninth Amendment privacy protection right, for those of you legal scholars who follow this. And then again in a 1977 ruling that I wasn't aware of on state data collection, that the Constitution protects private information. In California, both types of privacy are covered by the state constitution. And one of the lawyers for the laboratory scientists who challenged the background check said the ruling was in some ways a victory because the court left in place past privacy decisions. But he disputed the court's contention that the expanded inquiries were reasonable. The idea that we have to encroach into privacy-protected areas where low-level employees cannot affect the outcome of a NASA mission is mind-boggling, Attorney Stormer said. And that the case is NASA versus Nelson, in case you want to look it up. That's in the January 20th San Francisco Chronicle, Section B. Loans up. Wells Fargo hits record profits. The largest home lender posted a record profit for the fourth quarter as lending expanded for the first time in a year. Net income rose 25% to $3.41 billion from $2.82 billion in the same period a year earlier. Solid growth in a variety of businesses. Are you finding it easier to make a loan? I'm not aware that that's the case, but Wells Fargo is making more money anyway. Big time. It's biggest ever. Borders is closing, and there's a discussion of this whole thing in the Santa Cruz Weekly. I haven't bought a single book or anything in my life from Borders in Santa Cruz, although I'm often in there checking out their books. Sometimes I sit down and talk to people upstairs in the coffee shop, and I usually tip the staff who are there, because I think it's not their fault that Borders is there. And in fact, a lot of them are going to lose their jobs. But I've never purchased anything, not because I have a lot of love for Coonerty's bookshop, like you can gather that, Bookshop Coonerty, Bookshop Santa Cruz, but because I do believe in buying locally, even when that sometimes runs aground, when I have to boycott certain stores because they've really explicitly supported downtown ordinances that criminalize homeless people or that directly discriminate against homeless people in their business practices. And sometimes this works out very well when we declared a boycott against the Connie's Jack's Hamburgers. Connie is one of the owners of Jack's Hamburgers. She came directly to the table and clarified she didn't think she was discriminating, a fact disputed by dozens of homeless people, but she would be happy not to discriminate in the future, and that was good enough for the rest of us, and everything went on fine, and homeless people were happy that they could spend their money there again, in spite of attacks by Cynthia Matthews, who owns the property next door. And again, this has to do to some extent with the Red Church's Monday meal that some Cynthia Matthews and some people don't like over there in the Red Church. But I like to buy locally. I think it's a good idea to buy locally. I think, you know, homeless people for sure spend locally. That's where most of their money goes. Panhandlers, the money you give to panhandlers, it goes into local businesses or private enterprises. Here's a letter attacking me in the paper from, again, the same date, January 20th. I the letter says that, that Rowena Fulk writes the letter. She was sorry that the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals was unable to observe my behavior at the City Hall meetings. I was downright hostile to the council and the mayor and caused embarrassment to those who attend. She used to go to council meetings to see if she could get involved in decision-making, but after several visits, she decided she didn't want the threatening feeling that she got from the environment, and she doesn't go anymore. The public doesn't owe, she writes, anyone housing, food, transportation, medical services, money. We have all earned our place in society. If someone disagrees with me, open your spare rooms, and so forth and so on. Well, a couple of things. Mostly what I say at City Council points to the fact that large amounts of money go for costly consultants and relatively small amounts of money go for the basic services that people need, poor and homeless people and lower income people as well. But my main concern about City Council often has to do with their criminalization of people, the laws they pass that criminalize poor people. And, yeah, I am definitely hostile to what the City Council is doing. I think everybody should be. I think you should be hostile to what Muammar Gaddafi is doing and to what the dictators in Egypt and Tunisia and elsewhere are doing. And autocratic bodies that pay no attention to the rights of poor people and continue to do cozy deals with rich folks and rip off the area need to be, well, identified, exposed, and opposed. I mean, that's just how I see it. And I try to give City Council credit when it does some good things. So, for example, this week it postponed, I believe, a decision to further tax and regulate and essentially suck dry surfing schools that weren't involved with its own sort of pet surfing school. They also held off on the bicycle licensing to be shown in visible places on bikes that was proposed. I haven't actually reviewed the council meeting. I didn't go to it. I was told that the oral communications period, the doghouse period, the ghetto period, that they've moved oral communications perhaps to cater to the opinions of such people as Rowena Fulk, who believe that somehow, you know, it should be a very pleasant and enjoyable experience to go to City Council, sort of like, you know, a massage or something. City Council is, you know, a place where there can be some heated debates. There can be some real controversy. There's some real problems in our society at this time, and real people are suffering. And I think we saw some of that today, some of us who were at the rally at the county building, which I may be playing a little of in a bit. I did some taping there today. Attempt of solidarity by, I guess, MoveOn.org organized a rally. Not one of my favorite groups, by the way, but I'm always glad to see people standing up for the issues of labor solidarity. Right on. One union guy scowled at me saying, "You support unions?" And I said, "Why not?" And he said, "Well, because..." And he went through a long... I said, "Wait a minute." I said, "Why not?" Meaning, why not? And... yeah, unions are a really important part of the successful struggle to raise the standard of living of everybody. On the other hand, it's not often the case. Well, that's hard to say how frequently it's the case, but I'm not happy with union leadership all over the country in terms of how it's let itself be led around by the nose by the Democrats. And we see increasingly neoliberal destruction of labor movement all over the country, and it's being sold out to corporations and to wealthy interests. Here's a positive decision that came down, although it's a kind of a small one. This was, again, from about a month ago, January 14th. Protesters win ruling in court. Golden Gate Bridge District is violating demonstrators' rights by requiring small groups to obtain permits to use the walkway, banning bullhorns and handheld signs, and barring protests after 2 p.m. on weekends. A federal judge has ruled. The rules prevent spontaneous demonstrations, make protests much harder to see or hear, and do little to promote traffic safety, U.S. District Judge Marilyn Hall Patel said in a January 7th ruling. Bridge officials presented no evidence that an individual with a small group with a sign amidst the multitude on the bridge's sidewalks realistically presents a serious threat to traffic and safety, Patel said. I mean, obviously, but you can see the kinds of interference with the Constitution that authorities like to engage in and feel privileged to engage in, similar to what Mayor Ryan Coonerty does at his city council meetings when he continues to cut back public time, when he puts oral communications in a special period that is isolated from the other two main council meetings, and when he enforces rules that virtually no other city council along the coast does, which has to do with preventing people from speaking for 2 minutes on individual consent agenda items, which make up most of the city council's agenda, and usually most certainly almost the bulk of its appropriations, with some exceptions. Unless you can get a council member to get you to back what you're doing, Santa Cruz, unlike virtually every other community along the coast, won't let you talk on that agenda item specifically. He gives you a 2-minute period to talk on all the agenda items combined in one group. And since there could be as many as 30, 35 items, sometimes as few as 6, some usually in the middle, that severely cuts into city council time. Anyway, the rules that the protesters were challenging in federal court require organizers of political demonstrations on the bridge walkway to apply to the district for a permit at least 4 business days. Apply for a permit, does this sound familiar? In advance, if they plan to carry handheld signs. Why would that be? You know, the rules prohibit signs on handles or poles and sound amplification equipment. They forbid weekday demonstrations between 6 and 10 a.m. and between 2 and 7 p.m. and protests after 2 p.m. on weekends and holidays. I don't know how they could think that these laws would be constitutional, but I would bet that they were enforced for quite a period of time. And it really shows you San Francisco is a liberal area. How they could possibly get these laws passed and get away with it shows how supine the population is and how, I don't know, the words fail me. Anyway, here's a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello?
Hello, Robert?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, barely.
Okay, well,
Can you speak up a little bit?
Sure, can you hear me now?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay, what's cooking?
Okay, did the men's team have the meeting at my place?
Now, you're on the air, you know. You're live on the air right now, so you should
be... Well, I'd rather not be live on the air, but... I'm calling the radio show, and you're doing the radio show.
That
tonight,
is correct,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, I want to talk to you. You wouldn't even know the answer to my question.
Well, look, why don't you call me at home? You know the number, 423...
Well, that's going to be too late to answer my question, so
We'll speak to your audience now. You have an opportunity.
Okay, hello, everybody in Santa Cruz. I hope you're having a good time. Hope Robert's doing a good show. I'll see you later.
Sounds good.
Big changes coming to Santa Cruz.
Thank you.
When I get home. Bye.
All right, bye-bye. That sounds like my, not for sure, actually. The voice sounds a little, I can only guess who that might be. Anyway, these ridiculous protest rules on the bridge were thrown out by a local judge. 2 Bay Area activists filed suit challenging all the provisions except the limits on weekday protest hours. Patel's ruling, if it stands, would overturn the weekend and holiday hour restrictions. I'm not sure it wouldn't overturn the weekday protest hours. And the other curbs on groups smaller than 50, and would not affect larger groups. It's a victory for free speech, spontaneous speech, and the right to protest, A.J. Krishnan, lawyer for the plaintiffs, said. Mary Curry, spokeswoman for the Golden Gate Bridge Highway and Transportation District, said officials haven't decided whether to appeal. One plaintiff, Derek Turner, said he went to the bridge during the Olympic torch rally in April 2008 with a sign protesting China's policy in Darfur, Sudan, unaware that he needed a permit, and the highway patrol grabbed him and seized the sign. Co-plaintiff Toby Blom, challenged the restrictions on monthly protests she organizes at the bridge for Code Pink, the anti-war group. Lawyers for the Bridge District argued the rules don't significantly limit political speech because protesters need no permit to gather elsewhere in San Francisco. And of course, my mind goes back to Santa Cruz because that's the kind of talk that the judge used in the Becky Johnson case when she was singing a song about the homeless in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz on the public sidewalk at a perfectly reasonable volume. And she was, the court said that wasn't a free speech issue when she was shut down by a heckler who said he wanted to sleep upstairs in the middle of the day because she could have been walking up and down, singing it somewhere else and gone somewhere else. She didn't need to be in that spot. Although, ironically, the spot in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz, or bookshop Coonerty as I call it, is one of the two so-called free speech zones in Santa Cruz, which where people are supposedly allowed to ignore, and they're not quite been clear, but there are little discs that are actually set into the sidewalk that say exempt zone. I think it's ignore the distance requirements, where you're allowed to actually set up tables in an area where it would normally be illegal because of the incredibly restrictive no tables within 10 feet of a directory sign, a statue, a kiosk, a phone booth, you name it. All these pieces of sidewalk furniture that have been put in some cases, it seems specifically to eliminate public space and the right to engage in political activity in public space, or at least to sit down in public space, because there's a not just a 10-foot setback from those areas, there's a 14-foot setback for sitting or for peacefully spare changing within those areas. I know, the menace of panhandling. Let's eliminate all our rights so that we can get rid of those darn panhandlers. How about a musical break here while I get my bearings? If you want to get in touch, give a call to 423-7772, and we can talk on the air. But remember, this is live radio. If you want to call Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, or talk to me about things you want on the show, you need to call another number, 423-HUFF, 423-4833.
I got a close friend of mine here with me tonight, gonna come up and do a song, Mr. Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine. Come on, Tommy. Tommy also makes great acoustic records in the Night Watchman. Men walking along the railroad tracks, gone someplace, there's no going back. Highway patrol choppers coming off over the ridge. Hot soup on a campfire under the bridge. Shelter line stretching around the corner. Welcome to the new world order. Families sleeping in their cars in the Southwest. No home, no job, no peace, no rest. Well, the highway's alive at night, but nobody's kidding nobody about where we go. I'm sitting down here in the campfire light, searching for the ghost of Tom. He pulls the prayer book out of his sleeping bag. Preacher lights up a butt and takes a drag. Waiting for when the last shall be first and the first shall be last. in a cardboard box neath the underpass. You got a one-way ticket to the promised land. You got a hole in your belly and a gun in your hand. Sleeping on a pillow, solid rock. Bathing in the city's aqueduct. Tom said, Mama, wherever there's a cop beating a guy, forever hungry newborn baby cry, where there's a fight against the blood and hatred in the air, look for me, Mom, I'll be there. Wherever somebody's fighting for a place to stand, for a decent job or a helping hand, wherever somebody's struggling to be free, look in their eyes, Ma, you'll see me.
Nobody.
And that was The Ghost of Tom Joad by, not quite sure who exactly. Well, let's see. It was by live version featuring Tom Morello. So there. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert. Call-in number here is 427-3772. Huff meets every week in case you're interested in the issues I'm raising on the air, specifically as they relate to folks who are outside in the rain right now, I imagine, or trying to get out of the rain without being ticketed by Officer Winston or some other eager police officer who's enforcing the absurd rules that and the cruel rules that have been passed by the Santa Cruz City Council. Not unique to Santa Cruz in some respects, but actually we were the first to pass them in the state of California, the first to pass a whole series of downtown ordinances after Seattle did. And that's a shameful burden to bear, and that's what we bear. And it's all the more disgusting that people like Vice Mayor Don Lane and Catherine Byers, who are on the board of directors of the Homeless Services Center, support this kind of crap. I guess some people talk about it as a trade-off so they can convince nervous politicians to continue to fund homeless services if by driving them, you know, out of the downtown area, by giving police all the more power, with the notion that this somehow will create a more propitious business climate. It's not really worth much analysis. I don't think it has much to do with that. Coming up is a thing called Project Connect, which is an interesting event that happens, I think it happens once a year in Santa Cruz, maybe twice. It's where all kinds of services are kind of centralized for one day in the Civic Auditorium across from the City Hall complex, and homeless people can come and get a lot of different things done on that day if they want. And that's always a good thing, but again, that's sort of like the one-day-a-year phenomenon or the two-day-a-year phenomenon for the big charity meals that Steve Plaich helped to roll into motion after the Vets Hall's closing removed a location for them because the city and the county, again, seem to be colluding on removing, again, more public space for poor people that they had previously had. It does seem like a conspiracy in the sense that it's done consciously, it's done obliviously, it's done clearly, and I think it's done illegally, frankly. Here's a story from Boston. Veterans are 12% of Massachusetts homeless. It's according to Boston.com News. On any given night, there are roughly 1,890 veterans living on Massachusetts streets, putting the Bay State in line with the national average for homelessness among veterans, according to an analysis published by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development and the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. According to the study, veterans account for 12% of the state's homeless population, which totaled 15,482 people at any given time in 2009. The study Veteran Homelessness, a supplemental report to the 2009 Annual Homeless Assessment Report to Congress, is the first ever attempt by both federal agencies to gauge the exact nature and extent of homelessness among veterans. According to HUD and the Veterans Administration, nearly 76,000 vets nationwide lacked shelter on a given night in 2009, with about 136,000 spending at least one night in a shelter during the year. Of those veterans without a home, 57% lived in a shelter or a transitional housing program, while 43% lived on the streets. Nationally, 12% of all people experiencing homelessness were identified as a veteran in Massachusetts. Veterans account for 6.8% of the population. And that's from Rad Times, which is an interesting service that passes on a lot of interesting articles about street performers, homeless folks, and civil rights for poor people. You want to get involved with Rad Times, Google for it, and get on their email list. I've often talked about this, and I kind of repeat the same thing, that the Veterans Hall served a really important purpose for homeless vets, although homeless vets had their complaints about how they were treated by other vets, but mostly by the management of the Veterans Hall and Tim Bratton, who was a notorious for-profit manager of the Vets Hall, who was widely criticized for yogaizing the hall in terms of bringing in upper-middle-class people for money and essentially starving out or shoving out or the vets and causing them problems. And indeed, some have gone so far as to suggest that he was in part behind the determination to close the Vets Hall, which, as some may know, as most probably know, was closed allegedly for earthquake damage, but actually there was a real dispute. Two engineers brought in by the vets showed that that was a completely unnecessary move, and it still continues to be closed, even though a court has found that the vets are not being given ample alternative spaces elsewhere. And I had a long chat with Bob Patton about that. Maybe I'll give him a call before the show is over, see if I can get him to give me an update on that. In the meantime, let's hear some more street interviews and maybe a phone call or two. Who knows? 427-3772 is the phone number here in case you want to call in.
I'm down around Pacific Avenue at Soquel and Pacific. It's about 7:15 on the President's Day, February 21st. I should say Führer's Day, since our president is manfully bombing the Afghanis and the Iraqis into... My goodness. I'm not sure what that's about. But I'm here with... can I say who I'm with, or should I...
David Gale.
And David, you were telling me that the police no longer give you citations, for example, this morning, because there's really no point in it. They feel that... maybe they feel that there's no shelter, and they understand that. Maybe they feel that the tickets aren't going to go anywhere. Maybe they feel both. What do you think?
I'm not going to show up either way.
There you have it. A scofflaw Gale. He's going to get it, man.
David Gale.
Thank you, David. And down on the mall, it's around 20 to 11 on Tuesday, February 22nd. We're listening to that old man of music, Robert Blind Bear Facer. I understand you have an arraignment downtown, and I guess, are you going to go into a Baskets court, or are you going to disqualify the commissioner and go to some other court?
Well, Baskets court is fine with me. The ones up there in that wing over there on the other side of the patio, I don't trust them. Every time I go to court there, it's kangaroo. I mean, they don't even look at you. They just say guilty, and that's it, But basket, at least sometimes I get dismissed, and sometimes, I walk out of there, she says, well, the guy didn't show up, so, the whole
thing. Well, I know you were found to have been singing when you didn't even raise your voice, and you were part of a conspiracy to disrupt the bookshop Santa Cruz, according to Commissioner Baskett, and you're appealing that case, right?
There's exceptions to every rule. We sat there for 4 days and used every logical explanation that we could possibly come up with for being there and being absolutely legal 100%, and Baskett just looked at us and said guilty. It was funny in a way, because it was just kind of blatant. I sat there and I tried to figure out, looking at all these arguments, I mean, we had pages of legal briefs, we looked up all kinds of cases. We had the whole thing really stacked for us, but Baskett said, well, no, you were, well, she went, she didn't just say guilty, she went through a very elaborate explanation and said guilty, that which was her ultimate
conclusion.
Yeah. So I wasn't really sure. If
you're going back to her court on what? On Friday? What's the date you're going back?
The 28th. What day is
today? Is the 22nd, I believe. So it'll be
next Monday.
Next Monday, yeah, at 1:30
in the afternoon. Yeah.
Well, best of luck, you wild and crazy guy.
All right, thank you.
It's just an arraignment, though. You'll be making a plea, right?
Yeah, I'll just be pleading not guilty.
Yeah. You might mention that there's no room in the shelters, and you know, period. And if she asks, would you go to a shelter, say that's not the issue. The issue is whether there's any room. And if you've never been put on a waiting list, I take it, over at the Homeless Service Center.
I was on the waiting list when I first got here. Excuse me, I keep having this cough, but
man drops socks.
Yeah, dropping socks in the street. The first thing I did when I got here was I went there and I got on the waiting list, and they told me, come back in three. You gotta re-up in 3 days, otherwise we'll take you off the waiting list. Yeah. So for a while, I had a cell phone. You know, I don't use them anymore, but at that point, you know, I was using a cell phone, so I'd call them every 3 days and keep myself on the waiting list. And as soon as I got off of the waiting list. I mean, as soon as I didn't call him up, I was off the waiting list.
I missed that. I was talking about.
Now, it should be said that this is supposedly no longer the case, although it wasn't clear to me when I spoke to the employee several weeks ago whether the policy had explicitly changed or whether there was some new rule that was put into force by the Monica Martinez administration when they came in. But the issue of the waiting list is a very important issue for a lot of homeless people now if they want to avoid having their credit destroyed and possibly going to jail for sleeping ban citations, because the new law, the new amendment to the law passed at the initiative of the city attorney, and I think because of the actions of Peace Camp 2010, as I've said earlier, the homeless activists raising these issues in an embarrassing and persistent way publicly that I think finally forced the city attorney's hand. But you have to be on a waiting list. If you are on a waiting list, at least, you cannot, supposedly, all tickets you are given, you'll still be hassled, still be searched, still be told to move on, still be treated like essentially a second-class citizen by the police department and by the Parks and Rec. In terms of getting these tickets for doing nothing wrong, you'll still be required to identify yourself. You'll still be subject to, you know, a search of your property and your nearby possessions if they choose to do that, interrogation, orders from the police department. I mean, imagine if some other person came up and told you to do all these things for absolutely no good reason. You know, the idea that we are trained to do this kind of stuff is, I think, damaging both to the soul and to our spirits as free women and men, free human beings. It's not good. In any case, if you get on a waiting list, supposedly, you still have to undergo all this shit, and you'll still get a ticket, but the city attorney is supposed to check regularly, and if you are on that waiting list, those tickets will be dismissed. So we're going to see if this actually is the case, and that'll be good if it is. According to, as I mentioned before, activist Steve Plaich, who has been working with Peace Camp 2010 attorney Ed Fry and other defendants to try to raise issues in court around this ridiculous prosecution of homeless activists for actually performing public service for the community in making the kinds of civil rights changes that other groups have made for other disabled and disadvantaged and disenfranchised groups. Steve has done some research on this and is trying to serve as a middle person with the city attorney's office's Rep. Kassman, who's a local myrmidon of Barrisoni, one of the local flunkies who operates out of that department. And that's a word, by the way, that I was banned from using at city council when I was speaking at city council. Speaking of which, I actually I was going to go into city council on Tuesday and speak there, mainly because I'd heard that the city council was telling people who turn their backs on the city council, Steve Plaich was one of them, I don't think he did so necessarily out of disrespect, simply because he wanted to refer to somebody in the audience, but was immediately told to face front. You know, you're in the army now. No, you're not in the army. You're City Council is supposed to be, to some extent, under public direction. You have a right as a citizen to express yourself any way you want, provided you're not actually disrupting the meeting. At least that's what the Ninth Circuit Court said in my case. And he was told to turn around. Well, I was considering going again, and I may indeed go again and challenge this point, or just, you know, put my back to the City Council at one point. And that's, yes, it's definitely an act of disrespect for the City Council and what they're doing, holding a doghouse oral communication session at a time when the overwhelming majority of people who would normally hear the oral communications will not hear it because it has been strategically isolated from that group. And that's what Mayor Coonerty has done. I wrote Mayor Coonerty and the City Council the following letter. This is to bring to your attention four matters. The first is a series of resolutions which the Berkeley City Council has considered, one of which it has passed regarding humane treatment for political prisoner Bradley Manning, being held in Virginia in solitary confinement for allegedly leaking details of U.S. war crimes to the press. And it should be mentioned today that Julian Assange, for those of you who follow the media, the WikiLeaks, one of the WikiLeaks founders, has been ordered to be deported to Sweden to face not charges but questioning in sexual assault case, which has been a subject of significant controversy among a lot of us because who feel that this is simply a first step in getting him dumped in the U.S., where under national security he may end up in, who knows, one of their favorite torture centers, in Guantanamo, in a dungeon somewhere, because he has really seriously embarrassed the U.S. government. And WikiLeaks' exposures may be significantly contributing, I think are significantly contributing, to the revolutions in Middle Eastern countries that are upsetting the balance of power for the U.S. elites, the U.S. elite and other elites in the world. Mostly the U.S. elite is what I'm looking at. Anyway, Berkeley City Council did put a resolution forward. It did pass it. And Santa Cruz City Council hasn't done anything of the kind, even though we suggested they do it 2 months ago. The second is a resolution offering to accept Guantanamo prisoners long held under dungeon-like conditions with no charges, some for nearly a decade. And I give a reference point on indiebay.org, which is a website I recommend people check out, Santa Cruz Indie Media. Also, again, IndieBay, IndieBay.org/Santa Cruz. For the audio presentation before the City Council, go to this website and a lengthier discussion of these issues. You might also consider archiving videos of City Council meetings so we could at least watch what the Council is doing in this period of diminishing public comment and accessibility. And indeed, as we heard from activist Bob LaMonica yesterday at the Huff meeting, was that there were only, I think he said, two speakers at the oral communications period on Tuesday. That the City Council convened, said we have half an hour for speaking, heard two speakers, I'm not sure, certainly very few speakers, I think he said two speakers, and then took off, meeting its legal requirement to allow an isolated period for oral communication. I'm not sure that that is legal. I think that so severely disadvantages both the public who would like to hear speakers and the speakers who would like to be able to not just speak to the public but also go to the other, address other agenda items, not have to make several trips down to the City Council, that it's probably unconstitutional. Violates also the law, the state law, which is the Brown Act or the Public Meetings Act, which guarantees protections for members of the public not to be thrown out of meetings, to be allowed access to meetings, not to be told they can't talk because the City Council doesn't like what they're saying. Of course, none of these things enforce themselves. Citizens have to take risks to make sure these things are in fact upheld. Continuing with my letter to the City Council, last December, a number of us requested a stronger version of the Manning resolution, also defending Julian Assange, be put on the City Council agenda, and we were turned down. The two continue to face persecution and, in Manning's case, imprisonment without trial, while the rest of the world explodes with just rebellion as a partial consequence of WikiLeaks revelations. A resolution from the Santa Cruz City Council is long overdue. The second thing I want to discuss is the obscene practice of balancing the budget on the backs of the poor and the middle class while the financiers, the rich, and those in power retain their privileges and power in the face of massive wrongdoing is something Santa Cruz does not want to repeat at a local level. I would urge an investigation of the city's investments, both, as I have suggested in the past, to divorce them from war profiteers like Camp Dresser and McKee, which is the group that's slated to get all kinds of money for the DSAL consultants, though not the most recent giveaway that they did on Tuesday, which was to another firm, but also to hold accountable those investing in toxic derivatives and other funds that have lost huge amounts of their value. To now claim that it is poor people who must pay the price would be laughable were it not neoliberal holy writ. Is Santa Cruz now spending huge amounts of money on consultants, highly paid officials, unnecessary police overtime, and expanded police services while cutting back social services and even city council comment time? And that's a rhetorical question, because they are. The third thing I want to bring to your attention is your inexplicable silence, Ryan, on following up on a meeting and interview which you publicly agreed to in January. I'm attaching the email for your review again and asking you to reschedule this interview or explain why you won't do so. Apparently, you misunderstood, though I thought the communication was clear on the phone and in person. The January 21st date is being for January 14th. I've repeatedly tried to get clarification from you, and you haven't replied. Given your public statements about accessibility and your willingness to meet with members of the public who so request, I'm confused. Is there some specific reason you don't want to meet with me personally? And, of course, I've asked him that question before, and I don't get an answer. Because, of course, it would show discriminatory activity that he doesn't want to admit to, but that he is clearly engaging in. The fourth is the city's decision to pursue what is becoming a $500,000 expense to defend its repressive city council rules that had me falsely arrested in 2002 and 2004 at the mayor's whim when no actual disruption had happened. I have offered in the past to resolve this issue quickly with a meaningful change in the rules protecting citizens whom the council disfavors, and the payment of attorneys' expenses. Instead, the city chooses to bloat the city attorney's bank account and waste everyone's time and money with a ridiculous lawsuit instead of an apology and requisite restitution. Why? Thanks, Robert Norris. And, of course, I haven't heard back from the city council or any of the city council members or the mayor. So that is that. Another email I sent off was to follow up on the Friday Take Back the Streets march or walk, which I discussed in some detail on the Sunday show, which involved some heckling and harassment by Take Back Santa Cruz activists and even the Kathy Agnon, the staff person for the Commission of the Prevention of Violence Against Women. And I even had a few words with Steve Plaich, who was acting as a monitor for the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women as well. Here's what I wrote to Kathy. Hi, Kathy. Thanks for making available. This is a Public Records Act request I'm making. I wanted to find out what's going on with who's behind this, what I call this unholy alliance between the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women and Take Back Santa Cruz, which, even though, and I acknowledge the person that I thought had said that they had specifically, he'd seen them taking homeless property, now says that those were city employees who were doing that. And he still didn't have the most favorable view of Take Back Santa Cruz. Take Back Santa Cruz's rhetoric, if you look at their videos, is very anti-homeless and hostile. They mix homeless people with panhandlers, drug dealers, loiterers, negative loiterers, as distinguished from positive loiterers. And they put a lot of focus on illegal camps. All camps in Santa Cruz are illegal. They don't draw any distinctions between legal, the fact that people have necessary needs, legal or illegal, and what they advise citizens to do, which is call the police on such people. So this alliance between Take Back Santa Cruz and the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women has me worried. So I wrote, I wanted to get more details. I asked Kathy for specific information, including a list of the names and contact numbers of each of the members of the Women's Commission, which is supposed to be public information. She has not yet provided it, and she didn't provide it last week when I asked for it. But she gave me a big smile when she saw me on Friday and said she would, or said that could be done, or that was fine, or, you know, she was too busy. She had a number of things she said, but she didn't. She was trying to be very friendly and amiable about the whole, throughout the whole process. In any case, I wrote this letter. Hi, Kathy. Thanks for making available all the resources for those concerned about resisting violence, private and official, against women. And that meant that she opened up a room, that she opened up the bathrooms, that she provided treats and monitors. She went out of her way to assist the private organization Take Back Santa Cruz and the city's Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women and those of us who wanted to join from the public to, you know, demonstrate, yes, it is important that women and men, particularly women, feel comfortable and okay walking around at night. I think a lot of us don't feel comfortable because of the rules that the city council, and Kathy Agnon is not on the city council, but she's a part of this whole city staff structure that, for example, threatened citations for walking in a parade on New Year's Eve, that this whole structure of criminalizing public spaces is producing, I think, a greater anxiety and greater insecurity under the pretext of public safety. And actually what they're trying to do is simply, I think, cater to the agenda of the police department, which, you know, would prefer to see everybody patted down whenever they felt like it, you know, because that would help them deal with the criminals. Well, that's not the way we do it, nor is it the way we should do it in this society. And I'm afraid that that's the way it's going, unfortunately. Anyway, I wrote to get some more information, and I said, I didn't appreciate, however, your repeated attempts to exclude me from the march and the subsequent follow-up, which seemed really inappropriate, and combined with Annalicia Cube's abuse, felt threatening. Annalicia Cube is, of course, the head of Take Back Santa Cruz, or one of them, and she became verbally abusive toward me toward the end of this march. I couldn't decide whether she was genuinely expressing feelings that she couldn't control because she was upset that I had mistakenly interviewed a woman who then said she didn't want it interviewed and tape recorded, and I said, fine, I won't do that. That wasn't good enough for her, or that her Take Back Santa Cruz associates who wanted to use it to rage at me and then attempt to exclude me from the proceedings. And Kathy Agnon and Steve Plaich also seemed to go along with this, which really upset me at the time. And Steve could have been simply conveying the feelings of other members of the march saying they want you to leave. And I said, no, I'm not going to leave. This is not something that involves any real wrongdoing on my part. I mean, it was a mistake, and I apologize for it, but it's not something that's going to have me leaving this march. And I think, I don't know what happened at the end of all this. You know, but I know that the behavior of the people running the march seemed to me to be scapegoating me, and it was really uncomfortable. And I talked about it on Sunday a bit, and I mentioned it here in this letter. I think the community in these events is big enough for all groups, I write. I admit to particular concern with the CCPVAW teaming up with a group whose rhetoric seems to have hostile implications for the survival situation of homeless people. I refer you to their videos, Take Back the River Levee at such and such an address, Take Back Upper Ocean Street, and a variety of other YouTube videos apparently glamorizing Take Back Santa Cruz and vilifying poor and street people. Per my phone message in our earlier conversation last Friday evening, I am requesting an audio copy of any CCPVAW meeting that planned or discussed the Take Back the Streets march or any other involvement with the group Take Back Santa Cruz. B, all emails and other communications, memos, etc., mentioning Take Back Santa Cruz or Annalicia Cube or Take Back the Streets event. This would include any minutes, written material, interagency communication, communication to commission members, communications with the Santa Cruz Police Department and other police agencies, as well as communications with the public. And C, a complete contact list of all commission members, including emails and phone numbers, as publicly required. Why are these names and numbers not posted on your website? Please advise me how soon this will be the case. I am CCing copies of this to the city council, city manager, and city clerk to facilitate this process so people can directly contact commission members if they choose. Thanks for your help, Robert Norris. P.S. Feel free to contact me if you have any questions regarding the Public Records Act request. So far, I've heard nothing from anyone, but it's only been a few days. Well, I have about 15 minutes left in the show. Let's hear some more street interviews.
Oh, really? Okay. I'll do that.
So I know that the waiting list situation has supposedly changed, whereby it's not clear what the rules are for the waiting list anymore. It's more that they are... I was told by one source that all you got to do is get on the waiting list, and then you don't have to worry, period, because once you're on the waiting list, if you get any tickets, tickets will automatically be dismissed. But it's hard to tell whether that's actually happening, and so I've asked people to go and sign up for the waiting list and see what happens, but nobody has given me any reports yet. So if you do happen to sign up, let me know how things go.
Okay, I'm not really into living in the shelter.
You don't have to live in a shelter to sign up for the waiting list. It doesn't mean you're going to have to go in. You just have to sign up.
Well, yeah, it'd be telling a lie, because if I went in there and said I wanted to get on the waiting list, what if they said, it's your turn, and they grab me and drag me into the shelter?
Well, they can't do that. All they can do is they just notice your name comes up, and if you're not there, you're not there. I mean, you're not really wanting to be in a shelter. You just want to be on the waiting list so you don't get a ticket. That's the point.
That's the exact point. Yeah,
you have a right to do that. That's exactly what that waiting list is for, to show that, you're acknowledging the fact that there's no shelter, therefore you're on the waiting list. In theory, you're looking for shelter, but you're not obliged to take it. I mean, if they suddenly decided to provide a teepee, perhaps you might agree.
I'll tell you, I'd be in any kind of teepee. That's the only kind of thing that I'll live in. It's the only kind of roof that's safe. You can't fall off it. It can't fall on you.
They provided it, so what I'm saying is you might want to sign up for the waiting list based on that potential supposition, although it's rather unlikely, I admit. In other words, the idea, I just want to find out what they do if you get on the waiting list, whether they keep their word and so forth. And if you find any information about that, let me know.
Okay. I'll tell you what, maybe I'll go up there, and check it out for you and see, I'll try to get on the waiting list, see what happens.
That would be interesting. And in the meantime, I wish you luck. And, of course, America, or at least those Santa Cruzans listening, will know we are talking with
Robert Blind Bear Bruce Facer.
Thank you, Robert. We're talking with
Starter Seth.
And Seth, what's been happening?
I've been getting a ticket every single day, literally, for the last 2 weeks since the 7th.
And you've been getting citations
for anything.
And give me an example, like what happened today.
I sat down.
You sat down?
That's
criminal assent. And you?
Nope.
I don't even know if I should talk to you.
No.
This is pretty serious shit.
Excuse me. I'm being serious with you right now.
And me too.
I sat down within 14 feet of a building, but I wasn't 14 feet of a building. I was right here, and they wrote me a ticket for being
in front of New Leaf. You're talking to the kiosk.
Yes, I was in front of the kiosk.
You know what?
I was standing a little bit further down from the newspaper stand,
right?
And they gave me a ticket for sitting down for 14 feet with the building, 14 feet within a crosswalk, and then I left. And then some guy rolls up in a wheelchair, and he sits there, and they don't bug them. And they kick my
friend. You're allowed to sit in a wheelchair.
Yes.
All you need to do is just get into a wheelchair. What's the problem?
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying. You have a backpack, you have a piercing, you seem to have an injury on your on your nose. Does this indicate you're a disreputable character?
I am a disreputable character, it was close enough. Because I carry a backpack. Well, let me set this other example, okay? I have every day people come to me on the fucking avenue, tell me they get kicked off the avenue because they have animals. And their dogs are actually service animals.
Right.
And they tell me that, and I look down the street, and I walk down the street, and they actually have like 10 to 20 animals walking down the street, and nobody's been bothered or said something to anybody like that at all.
Is there a different class of people that have the animals
that
aren't bothered, like the wealthier, better, well to-do-ish types?
The people that think they're better than us, I guess.
They have more money.
Yes.
They must be better.
Yep. Yep.
Right. Now, let's ask your associate here. We've been talking with
Seth.
Thank you, Seth.
Starter.
Thank you, Seth. Starter.
Starter.
Starter. And what's your name?
Excuse me. Spare a little
if you wish to give it.
I do not.
Well, we'll call you Anonymous.
All right.
So, you have any reports, Anonymous, you wish to give?
So far since I've been to this town, I've been hassled by cops left and right.
Yeah.
This will only be in town for, like, 4 days.
Is that accurate?
That's accurate. Mm-hmm.
And what exactly have the police told you?
Pretty much to fuck off. Get out of here.
Hey, man, this is really going somewhere.
Well, I know. The cops were so... You might as well leave town. Like, me and him. The cops fucking said, well, don't fucking hang around town too long, because...
We don't want your kind around
here. Pretty much. In fact, we got in trouble for fucking just watching a fight earlier.
Where was it? Yeah, we witnessed a fight right down by the levee, and they harassed us for witnessing it.
How many police showed up?
Fucking like 12, dude.
Two.
No, dude, there was cops coming from every direction, dude. The cops that talked to us, there was two cops talking to us, but the guys that were taking that guy away, there was like fucking... Probably fucking fired
him. There's two cops taking him away, and there's two cops talking to us.
And what did they tell you?
Actually, it wasn't really. It was them asking and them harassing.
And what kind of harassment did they?
It was pretty much harassment of.
Well, no, you tried to light a cigarette, and he said, "Are you fucking stupid, dude?"
Yeah, he was really talking about.
Are you fucking dumb? The cops were cussing hard and fucking calling him names.
For lighting a cigarette.
For trying to light a cigarette.
In other words, they assume that you should know that this is a smoking-free area, or some of it is, anyway.
Hey, man, I was down by the ocean, and I got a ticket for smoking a cigarette for displaying merchandise on my...
What merchandise did you allegedly display?
Well, I didn't allegedly... I allegedly displayed merchandise, but I did not display merchandise.
But they were not telling the truth.
They were not. No, I was just walking down the street, and they gave me a ticket for displaying merchandise.
Were these the same police, or were these all different police officers?
Well, it was a few of them, but Winston is...
Officer Winston! Mark Winston!
Oh, my God. Holy cow.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. You ask anybody local in town, they will tell you that Officer Winston and the police force in Santa Cruz is harassing, and the police force in Santa Cruz is not doing... We the people.
Selective enforcement, perhaps?
Yep.
Enforcement against a particular class of people, perhaps?
Thank you, sir. Very much. End of recording.
Hey, this will be played Thursday night. I'll give you my card, and you can...
It is February 22nd, 2011, pretty much 10:39 p.m.
Thank you much, and again, we'll be back with Anonymous and with his associate. We're talking with Lawrence McGregor. And Lawrence, you've had an encounter with a new officer that you don't know the name of, but you have some concerns about?
Yes, sir. This officer is a new rookie in town, and I'm a legal marijuana patient. He shouted my pipe and said, "I don't give a f- over the ri- over."
He used the F word.
Yes, sir.
The fucking cop said that to you.
Yes, sir.
And when did this happen?
About 3 days ago.
And where?
Here in front of the boaters.
And what time of day or the night?
It was like 7:30 at night, right after I got out of school.
And what was the circumstance under which he approached you?
He said I had methamphetamines, a weapon, things like that, and I never had anything like that in my belongings.
Did he search you?
Yes, he did.
Did you give permission to search?
Yes, I did. I told him, go for it. Search me. I don't have nothing.
Do you have a search clause?
No, sir.
Don't give permission to search in the future. You don't have to do that.
All right.
Just say, no, thank you, officer. I appreciate your concern, but you don't have my permission to search. And have a good day. That's the best thing to do. So he destroyed your property?
Yes, sir.
But he didn't notice his name. You have a description of what he looked like?
He's short, like a Chinese or Japanese or a Korean look. Uh-huh. And he just said, "I don't give a fuck" on it, and shattered my pipe.
And how much was your pipe worth?
$75.
Well, you know, I would suggest you file a claim with the police department, although it would be more symbolic than anything else, but I always think it's good to document this kind of shit. I wouldn't guarantee you'd get anywhere, but I think, you know, it's a good thing to do, so.
All right. I could do that.
All right. We've been talking with
Lawrence McGregor.
How you been doing, Lawrence?
Quite well. I'm in school, finally.
You look better. You look thinner. You look meaner, happier.
I'm off the street. I live in Boulder Creek.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, you got a race. We have a quick afterword from...
Starter.
Go ahead, Starter.
Okay, so another thing about another day in Santa Cruz.
about the way the law works in Santa Cruz. Half the population in Santa Cruz jail is the street population and people that don't got nothing because the law breaks down on people that don't got nothing. I provide music. I provide art. I provide a great spirit.
What kind of music and art do you do?
I play guitar and I weave with palm fronds and also I spin hemp. And I have a great personality and I talk to people.
You have an associate who plays a harmonica.
I play harmonica also, and my associate that just played that you just heard plays it also.
Yeah, well, I like that kind of stuff, so that's just my preference. But,
me too.
Yeah. You mind if I say something rude?
Go ahead.
Kill cops because cops kill.
An honest sentiment from an anonymous individual on the street.
Stand up for your right. Get up. Stand up. It's not some. It's everybody on the streets and everybody traveling is traveling on the streets and everything. Because of that reason, we're not going to accept control. We are the people. We're not the government. We're not the corporations. We're not their normal.
We're the only true free people left.
We are what's making this happen.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
You too.
We're talking with a man who plays steel guitar.
Yeah.
And we're talking with
Cal.
And Cal, you were in some despair for the last few weeks because you had a guitar that was breaking down.
Yeah, the neck broke off of it. Flat just pulled right off of it. Yeah, but I fixed it. I fixed it right here in Santa Cruz myself. I used the wing nut.
The wing nut factor.
The wing nut factor. That's right.
Wow.
That's right. As long as it doesn't flip out and start bad mouthing people as they walk by or something, I'll be fine. But
so you played with it tonight?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And did you make any donations?
Oh, a little bit, but you know, I wouldn't. Just being able to make a penny on my own was a big thing to me, you know.
Your spirits seem higher.
Yeah, my spirits are a whole lot higher now. Yeah. I don't have to walk up and down the street asking people for spare change. I hate doing that. Worse than anything in the world. My old man raised me to believe that you want something from my dad, you work for it. So I ask him, can I have a quarter, Dad? Yeah, sure. What are you going to do for it? You can do some little job for him and he'll give you the quarter.
A work ethic.
Yeah, I like working. Working's a good thing.
I believe you can be. I hope you get paid what you're worth. So that's, of course, even more difficult. But anything else you want to say about the folks before we...
Nothing I can think of.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you.
Thanks, guy.
Right. I'll see you tomorrow.
All right, man. A lot of smoking going on late at night. It doesn't bother me for some reason tonight. In fact, there's kind of an aromatic odor to it. And it's good news.
And we have that... The evil Dennis is in the studio, Uncle Dennis, and he's 2 minutes early at least. However, I think I'm going to give him a little slack tonight. Even though, because he left town, we've had no homelessness marathon this year. Thank you, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Thank you, Uncle Dennis. I'm hoping that that will be archived, and who knows, maybe we'll be able to play some. Some of it looked pretty interesting, and it was a slip-up. Dennis was probably vacationing in Hawaii, doing something relaxing.
No, I had family business to take care of. I had to
he was
be out of town.
Probably engaging in some terrorist, Earth First-type activities, masquerading as a family man. But Uncle Dennis will give you all the details in the next 3 hours when he will be on endlessly with beer commercials and peculiar music and unusual terrorist alerts. Does that cover it, Dennis, pretty much?
That does, though this is one of those nights where I'm going to actually talk about an issue of interest to your listeners and other homeless and unhoused people. There is a freeze warning for Santa Cruz beginning tonight and going through at least Saturday morning, where temperatures will go down below freezing in open areas. There is the possibility for sleet and snow at sea level on Friday night or Saturday morning. So if you are an unhoused person, I suggest you find some kind of shelter or sufficient means to stay warm and dry, at least for the next 2 days.
There are plenty of public buildings, of course, that are available at night, but they're usually locked up. That's one of those things that happens in Santa Cruz and other cities of its in 21st century America. So I'm... thank you for the warning, Dennis.
Well, we don't usually get snow here at sea level.
No, we
don't. The last time we did was in 1976.
Wow. Yeah, I think I remember something about that, although maybe I don't. I don't know. I thought it, maybe it probably was 77 I was around. But, yeah. Hopefully the Homeless Service Center and other areas, there'll be warming stations opened up, but I haven't heard of anything actually explicit about that. And I think it's good that you're raising the alarm, Dennis. I should be raising the alarm, but at least you are. I'm glad that's happening. And that's it for me. Come back to hear more on Sunday morning at 9:30. Give me a call between times if you got stuff you want to report. Don't freeze. 423-4833 is the number to call off air. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrob Spears Broadsides.
Something I know ain't me. I'm tired of living up to what people expect me to be. You know that some people are different now. Ain't that a crying shame? Now wouldn't it be a real drag if we were all the same? And I'm not gonna try to please eyes that just don't see it. If I get myself together, you have the blues, not me.